We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
This is Greg Olson here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFL SundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 467. Today, we're brought to you by three awesome companies, awesome products, Manscaped, Sunday Ticket, and Bet Online. Scott, two quick wins against, I don't want to call them quick because those games took forever. Two wins, quick series against the Braves. What's up?
The games take the same amount of time. That's it. They take the same amount of time.
Last night's game, Wednesday night's game, took over 3.5 hours. So that was a little long. I think like 13 pitchers were used.
This is the thing for me. So I can't really tell that much of a difference between a 3-hour game and a 3.5-hour game. This is why I don't quite understand why people complain about it. It's like, if you're there for 3 hours, just stay for the rest of it. Who cares?
I think it's less about the total time and more about the slog within it, where it's like everything takes a long time, whether it's you know, Luis Avalon picking his ass waiting to throw a pitch, or Boone coming out to make another pitching change, or just more walks.
Could have done without Jonathan Holder shitting the bed in the ninth and just getting through the inning without Britton going up there.
Well, have you noticed that
having to throw and then come in the game?
The Yankees are incapable of winning a game without using Britton, Ottavino, and Chad Green.
Yeah, it's been a healthy narrative.
Boone tries to get through the games. Like, he tried to get through Tuesday's game. You have an 8-0 lead. You should not have to bring in your closer in an 8-0 game. He tries to get through the game with the middle relief, but they're just incapable of doing it because they immediately allow base runners. And I know the tying run didn't come to the plate until later in the game, but you could see where that game was trending with those other relievers.
He's trying to nip it. Yep.
So honestly, what is even the point of trying to get through with the garbage relief? It's okay. Okay, let's bring in David Hale, but then Ottavino has to come in immediately. So what's the point of David Hale?
We just swept the Atlanta Braves 2 games. I didn't mean to put you down this path so early. I'm sorry for everybody listening. I apologize. I realized what I did as soon as I opened my goddamn mouth. I regret it. I take it back.
Do you not agree?
Let's talk about the beautiful wins that we had, because for the most part, the bullpen actually did look good for the most part.
Well, the good guys look good, but we already know the good guys look good. They always look good.
Well, Loaisiga looked good too.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Until he started, you know, leaking a little bit. But
no, I thought Loaisiga's stuff last night was maybe the best it's looked.
Yeah, I agree.
Since like 2018 when he originally came up, he was hitting 97, 98 easy. So yeah, Loaisiga's stuff has never been an issue. It's just his location in the majors has been questionable at times,
which is so weird. And that's why I want him back to that, you know, relatively two pitch guy and out of the bullpen. My plan is coming to shape with him. I think Boone and I are in the same headspace there. Okay. I'm glad he's being used like that. He's definitely like Chad Green, 2017 Chad Green.
Well, he's got much better secondary pitches than Chad Green.
Okay. That's fair, but similar in style in the way that Boone is using him, like Girardi was using.
I'll give you
like Girardi was using Green.
Yeah. Do you mean he could be a 2-inning guy every few days to sort of bridge the gap and just come in the 5th or 6th inning and lock it down for 2 innings, hand it off to somebody else? Because I could see him turning into that. And then if you have Chad Green and Johnny Lasagna doing that on alternate days, I mean, that's a super weapon.
That's ideal. That is an ideal situation. Yeah, no, that's a good thing. I think that he is trending in that direction. I know he's trying to stretch him even beyond 2, trying to get 3, getting greedy.
I mean, we've seen Boone get greedy with Loaisiga. We've seen him get greedy with King.
Do you blame him after what you just said at the top of the show, trying to get through the game without using his big guys, and he sees a guy rolling? Do you blame him? I don't hate it. I think it's against the trends of today where you just pull a guy at first sign and you're actually like letting a guy try to work through something. So I, especially at this point in the season, I don't mind that, honestly.
I mean, it all depends on the game situation. I don't know why in Tuesday's game, after the Braves got close, he kept trying to go to the garbage relievers and trying to get cute. Once it became, it was, what was it, 8-4 and the tying run, and Chad Green had to come in to clean up the tying run. Like, the only reason it got there was because I'm drawing a blank on who started that inning, but it was not, I think I wrote it down. Whoever started that 8th inning, it was not a good reliever.
David Hale. Oh, no, that was the 7th inning. Sessa.
Sessa starts, and we know, like, maybe Luis Sessa can be good, but he's working his way back from COVID. He's only had a couple appearances this year. You're bringing him into, it's a 4-run game, so it's not a save situation or anything like that, but it's still a close enough game where the Braves have momentum. I don't love that. I don't love trying to get cute for a second straight inning. You already tried it with David Hale. It didn't work. You had to bring in Adam Ottavino. Now you try it again with Luis Sessa. It's just setting it up so when the dominoes fall and you got to use all your bullpen arms.
Yeah, but Luis Sessa is definitely on the pecking list of guys he trusts at this point. And yes, he's coming back, but he's on the mound healthy, ready to go. He's ready to use him. And to his defense, Glaber's not helping him with ground balls as well. He gets a ground ball, you expect outs, not more guys on base.
True, that's fair. And I thought Glaber and LeMahieu made an uncharacteristic error up the middle on Tuesday, but don't you give like 50% of that error to Glaber for just standing right in front of him, like acting like he might go for it and then just screening LeMahieu?
There's an awareness thing there, yeah, that they have to work out for sure.
And the communication.
Glaber's still getting used to being on that side of the field again. I know he started as a shortstop and that's where his natural position is, but yeah, there's definitely some communication things, and I'm fine with like it, that just happens with time. DJ is gonna cover a lot of ground. I mean, like last night, he saved runs with that sliding play in the hole, which would have been a routine ball, but he was shifted over because of whoever was up. But he just covers a ton of ground, so I think that Glaber's got to get, you know, just feel that out and get used to it, and that'll come with time.
Yeah, there was the communication breakdown where no one was covering the bag on a double play too.
Yeah, that's bad. That's Little League stuff.
Yeah. Do you think Glaber's offense is bleeding into his defense?
Probably. I mean, it makes sense. As a human being, right? You get frustrated in one area, it's going to bleed into the next. You try to let it not, but just a natural causation makes that happen. You know what I mean? Like you get frustrated, and then you bring it out into the field. So he's becoming this player where he's got to be able to get through, you know, slumps at the plate and not have it translate into the field, because those are going to happen. That's baseball, Susan. You're going to slump at the plate. Don't let it take you into a bad place in the field as well. But I also think that's part of it, and a lot of it really is just the familiarity, the fact that they did not have a full preseason, you know, spring training to work through and get that chemistry as a shortstop, second base tandem. And then just giving Glaber more reps at short in game situations. I mean, think about that. He didn't really have a spring training to get into a position that's new again for him. I mean, he played second base for the majority of the time. He's going out full-time shortstop. You need reps for that. Like, I don't care if you grew up playing, you still need the reps to get the feel back. And I think that's what we're going through.
Yeah. Don't you remember though, when in 2018 and 2019, whenever Glaber would fill in for Didi at shortstop, we always said his instincts looked better, crisper at shortstop than they did at second base. And we were like, well, that makes sense because he was a shortstop all the way through the minor leagues and he had to get used to second base. So I haven't seen those instincts yet at shortstop this year. And I'm not saying like, oh, Glaber Torres is a lost cause at shortstop, because I don't believe that. I think he will figure it out. He's such an insanely talented player all the way around. Like, I'm confident he will figure it out. But he's just been bad this year. And I think he's just been bad. And like, he will get better, but he's just been bad. Like, it's okay to call out.
And it's also very, very obvious now when you look at what we've seen over the past, 4 years, that Didi was a damn good shortstop. Didi was a damn good shortstop. Had, you know, did not make a lot of these small mental errors, covered a ton of ground, has a cannon as an arm. And just, I mean, Glaber has a good arm too. It's not like he doesn't, but Didi has, I think, a special arm from all different angles. You appreciate how good he was and how fluid he was, I think, yeah, at shortstop, and just seeing what Glaber, and I think Glaber, I don't think Glaber's ever going to be a superstar shortstop defensively. I think he's going to probably be, you know, I think he trends to like an above average defensive shortstop at peak. But right now he's just a middling average shortstop defensively, I think.
Do you think in the back of Brian Cashman's mind, and this actually will transition into DJ LeMahieu contract talk, do you think in the back of Cashman's mind he has Glaber at short for like the next 4 to 6 years and then move him back to second base after LeMahieu is no longer on the team if they were to sign him to a long-term contract?
If they were to sign him to a long-term contract. That's the thing here. So no, I don't think he's thinking that. I don't think you can think that far ahead. I don't think Cashman thinks that far ahead with position players. But so many things can happen there.
But do you think that Cashman, I think this conversation has had to have been had in the front offices, like, okay, at age 30, what does Glaber Torres project as? Does he still project as a shortstop, or does he project as a second baseman or a third baseman once he's in his 30s?
Right. Yeah, and it's a fair question, and I think what they're going to see this year is going to determine more of that, and how he can, you know, at peak, at prime age, what he could be as a defensive shortstop. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with DJ. I know we were going to talk about that. The other thing is that Didi's a 1 year guy in Philly as well. There's going to be a shortstop back on the market as well.
So that would break Yankees fans' brains if they brought
you imagine the, like, DJ LeMahieu who does not sign an extension, because someone very well could offer him a big contract, and it would be justified. It could.
The age is, I think, going to keep him from signing a contract that's out of the Yankees' comfort zone.
I think the age is going to determine options at the end of the contract. I don't think it's necessarily going to affect the AAV, and I think that's where a team could get a little nuts with the AAV.
He just turned 32 in July. So next year, midseason, he'll turn 33.
That's what happens.
So you're signing him. Say you were signing him to a four-year deal. Yep. He would be turning 37 in that last year, right?
He'll be 33 next year, plus 3 is 6, plus 4 is 7, yes.
So I think 4 years is what you're looking at for DJ LeMahieu.
So Mega Coda was asking me last night on Twitter just my opinion on the what the extension looks like for... I mean,
what'd you come up with, 10,000 years? Was that your cutoff point?
So no, he said realistic. So I actually went and looked up some comps and checked out to see where I think DJ might land with an extension, or, you know, if he did hit free agency, which he probably will at this point, what he would go for on the open market. And, you know, looking at what the comps are, you look at some of the older contracts and you got guys like, you got Cano up there, I think at 27 million.
No, 24.
I thought it was maybe the rest of the contract was 20. Oh no, you know what? It was Altuve. It was at 29, 27, 29. Anyway, it was Altuve and Cano were above him. And those are, to me, those are not great comps. But when you look at the shortstops and then you look at everybody else, where everybody lands, there's nobody else over 20 million. So 20 million is around the bar. If you can go to third baseman and look at them, but he's not a run producer like them. So I think that's going to be a knock on him. I think his overall temperament, like as much as it shouldn't be, will knock the contract down a little bit. If that sounds stupid, but it might be a real thing. So I got him at around 20. I think he's going to be around 3 to 4 year contract. And I pegged him for around a 20 million AAV, right around 20.
Okay. So, you know, 4 years at 80 million is what he's looking at.
And I would not
at.
Be surprised if someone went to 25 with him.
I would be.
I mean, if they're going to 20, I don't think.
But think about the teams that can do that. There's not many teams in baseball that are willing to pay someone like DJ LeMahieu $20 million plus. Okay. $20 million pluses are for big name superstars around the league, considered big name superstars. And there's only a small percentage of teams that even go that high for
is
salary.
Rendon
players.
A superstar, big name superstar. I would argue that he is not.
Scott Boris,
he's a very productive player.
Scott Boris positioned him as that. And Artie Moreno, who's one of the stupider owners in baseball, in my opinion, paid him like one.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that.
But okay. So you're talking about the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Angels.
Are the Dodgers still going to pay more guys?
No, but these are just the teams that could pay, right?
Yeah.
The Red Sox could pay, but guess what? They're rebuilding. So take them off the board.
I could see them being a bunch of dicks and going out there and offering him.
They're still paying Dustin Pedroia. Okay, they're not going
to
sign DJ LeMahieu.
If the Red Sox sign DJ LeMahieu, I will cry.
I think so he makes $12 million now. He's never gotten
that's a moot point in my opinion, though.
Well, what I'm saying is he's never gotten like a hefty payday. I think 4 years is the year amount, and it's going to be, let's call it 16 to 18 million is what the Yankees will be trying to sign him as. And I don't think there's going to be many teams bidding above that. So I believe he'll be back. The only way that they might have to like sweeten it is with like a vesting option for the last year. Whereas if it's like he finishes still with a number of plate appearances or some sort of award rankings, then he gets that option picked up for a fifth year.
So the one-year deals right now, the guys are going around the league signing are like Ozuna signed an 18-5 deal with Atlanta. He was projected at, you know, a similar contract, I'd say, to what LeMahieu were talking about. Maybe a little less, but he's an outfielder. There's a different market for that kind of player.
They pay more for offensive outfielders than they do for offensive infielders,
which
makes no sense.
Yeah, the production it doesn't make sense to me, but. There's a number of factors. Obviously, we don't know what the heck this offseason is going to look like with, you know, with the negotiations and all of that and what the owners are going to, you know, how they're going to punish the players, because that's what's going to happen. They're going to punish the players.
You're saying there's going to be collusion?
Maybe they'll be like, you know what? We're not going to punish DJ. Not going to punish DJ. He's the one guy we won't punish. But everybody else, yeah, they're done. So I don't know what the market's going to look like. Although you look at what he has done throughout the entire season, throughout the playoffs, the guy's a bona fide superstar. I mean, the name's not a superstar. The personality's not a superstar. On the field, superstar, big time. So I think he's going to get the $20 million. I would be insulted if you offered me J-Hop money, if I'm DJ LeMahieu. That's all I got to look at. $17 million, is that what you said? No. More.
Yeah, apples and oranges comparing a second baseman to a starting pitcher who can't get through three innings. But yeah.
Exactly. Right. MVP caliber player to a guy who can't get through three innings. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so
not a fair comparison.
LeMahieu's hitting, I think it was 427 or 420 something after last night's four hit game.
431.
431. Beautiful. And the spray chart went around social media the other night where it's just equal distribution of hits from left field line to right field line. It's beautiful. You can't shift on him.
He's the perfect player.
In some eyes, it's all in the eye of the beholder, Scott, because in some eyes, you know,
the eye of the nerds and the eye of the eye and the eye of the,
we're going to get to eye test versus nerd test later.
The eye of the eye test. Perfect. In all shapes and sizes.
Well, I think Cone and O'Neill had this conversation on the broadcast. Are there going to be more players who model themselves after a DJ LeMahieu approach where it's line to line? You can't shift on him. He's a line drive hitter. He's not just trying to launch. He's not even really trying to walk. He's just trying to make hard contact. Or are you still going to get the Aaron Judges, the Luke Voits, the Gary Sanchez? All I'm trying to do is hit the ball 400 feet and walk a bunch of times. And that's what my game is. I still think you're going to get more of the launch and walk guys. Strikeouts don't matter.
The percentages are in their favor.
But
it's hard and to beat not, DJ LeMahieu.
Yes, exactly. That's what they were missing. It's not easy to spray the ball across the field and hit 340. It's just not easy to do that in today's game. It's not easy to do that with defensive alignments. It's not easy to do that with literally the baseball, which travels. I
mean, LeMahieu's not getting those defensive alignments in all fairness. He's not seeing the shifts against him. So
but if you have any tendency, if you have any tendency that says you're more likely to hit it here than here, you're going to get shifted on. Even
if he doesn't.
No, he doesn't. But
that's what I'm saying.
Many players do. Shifts are up again this year. It's like all-time record shifts. I read an article, a very, very nerdy article. Ben Lindbergh wrote it. This year, lowest since 1968, which was like the peak of the dead ball era for batting average across the league and batting average on balls in play. So it's not just batting average, but also once contact is made, the ball's getting caught more. Why? Right. Why? And that's what the article was trying to figure out. It's like, well, that's weird, because even though launch angle revolution started, like you can date it back all the way to 2015, 2016, batting average on balls in play didn't move. It was basically in line. Then all of a sudden it plummeted this year. What's going on?
Batting average with balls in play, it counts balls out of the park, right?
Well, yeah, that's a hit.
I'm just making sure it doesn't. Okay.
So you would think that it would even go up because there's more home runs. Right?
But the percentages, no, because there's more strikeouts also. But the balls
that's
in
not
play
that
are
ball,
home runs.
Strikeouts.
The percentage of balls that are hit by those types of guys are in the air and out of the park rather than not, because otherwise they're striking out.
But strikeouts don't matter. Strikeouts are taken out of the ball and play equation.
That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly right. And because it's so home run or not, and it's not a long fly ball out anymore, it's a strikeout. If the long fly ball is going out.
Yep. You're thinking batting average on balls in play is up. It's down.
It's down. Okay, I got you now. Yeah, I'm confusing myself.
Yeah, so batting average on balls in play is down, which makes no sense. So they were thinking, okay, is it more defensive
shifting
in alignment?
Well, because there's fewer home runs than there would be.
No, it's just a percentage basis. Trust me, you're not understanding.
I'm trying
it's
to.
Just, it's, just a, it's, just, it's just a percentage basis.
Goddamn
so,
nerds.
So a home run is a hit. That's 1,000 batting average when you hit a home run.
I got that. Yep.
If there's more strikeouts and more home runs, you would think batting average on balls in play would go up because that's a sure hit every time when you hit a home run. But even though home runs are up, batting average on balls in play are down. So everything else other than home runs is getting caught more often. Why? Are they making
defensive alignment?
Are they making less contact or less hard contact? So softer contact means a better chance. No, that's not the case. Shift intuitively makes sense, But they found actually shifts the last 3 years, which have been up already, batting average on balls in play didn't move. So you can't say it's necessarily the shift.
How does a batting average, how does that change? How does that not shift?
It didn't really.
Defensive alignment was changing.
It went like down less than, like it was like less than 5% since like the peak of the shifting, which was like 2016-17 when everyone started shifting. Went from like, forget the exact numbers, I'm using these as examples. It went from like 295 to 293.
Okay, so then why are they doing it so often then? Because usually these
That's a good question.
Because this is a nerd. This is definitely a nerd trend. The defensive alignment is a nerd trend. It's coming from numbers. Why are they still doing it if it's that minimal of the of an effect?
Well, I think for certain players, it's more of an effect. Like I think if you were to isolate it to specifically Aaron Judge, you have a better chance at catching all of the missiles he hits to the shortstop hole than you do the ground balls he hits to the right side, which are few and far between. But maybe
so batting average of balls in play is more of an individual stat than when you look at the overview, the larger macro number, it actually doesn't give you the data that is useful.
Well, I think on a macro level, it evens out, but on a micro level, you probably player to player, you actually steal hits than you do give hits away.
I mean, you must.
That's yeah, you must, or else the nerds wouldn't do it. So one conclusion they came up with was the fact that defense is actually better this year because there's no fans in the stands. So you
that's
get
stupid.
Well, you get a better read on the ball.
Okay, that's dumb. I mean, how can they possibly elaborate. Tell me that?
That's a theory.
Yeah. So that's just like they literally go by numbers and stats, and now they're using the eye test. It's convenient. That's awesome. I'm glad. Can we tell the nerds?
Well, they were also using anecdotal evidence.
Put your glasses on.
My glasses are on.
And see what's happening in front of you. That's a dumb take.
They were using anecdotal evidence from scouts and league office members.
Okay. So okay, what's the other theory?
To be honest, it was a long article. And
it was just the fact that there's nobody in there. The seats are blue.
So oh, no. That was one of the
contrast.
What it basically concluded, like a lot of these
ground balls.
What basically a lot of these nerd articles conclude, they're usually not sexy conclusions, that it's an amalgamation of everything. And when you add it all up, it means lower batting average on balls in play, lower batting average across the league. But you know what I took away? That's a boring trend. If you're getting less contact, and then when you do make contact, it's a hit less often, that is boring.
You mean a trend in like boring entertainment?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. We've talked about this 1,000 times. That's why the home run is becoming less sexy because of the strikeout, because of the fact that when you do hit the ball in play, theoretically in play, ball in play on game tracker, it's caught. So that's why they're hitting it out. So now we're getting strikeout or home run. And because of the defensive alignment, you're seeing less DJ LeMahieu's. And that's what makes DJ LeMahieu so freaking special. The fact that he can spray the ball and hit it all over the place. He's not defensible. You can't just move your guys and then take care of DJ. Can't do that. You cannot cancel DJ LeMahieu.
So I just second guess myself because home runs are not included in batting average on balls in play.
I didn't think they were at first. No, I got that wrong. I just agreed with you.
I got that wrong. But the article talked about how home runs are up so much. So I got to reread that article. That was a confusing article.
That was a really good segment. It would make sense that home runs are not if strikeouts are not.
Because the fielders can't affect a home run. Right. Just like, well, they technically can. Like we saw Aaron Hicks rob a home run. Sure. But technically, they can't.
In that case, Gary Sanchez can technically affect a strikeout, right? Because he jerks the glove up from
what is he jerking?
A ball that's 8 inches outside the plate to the dead center of the plate.
Right. No. So I'm sorry, guys. I'm sure there was some people yelling at me like, "No, they don't count in batting average on balls in play." As I was saying that, the trend though does continue that the overall batting average is down, and I don't know if it's going to change anytime soon. I think we're still in that downward trend of more home runs, more strikeouts, more walks. And we're seeing it this year, especially. We're seeing a lot of things this year, which maybe you can just throw out and say it's a weird year. but I don't know. It's
the defensive alignment is the problem. And that's the whole reason why they're doing it, is because of the shifting, because they're taking away those things. And that's what makes DJ such a unicorn, because guys aren't doing that anymore. And they're talking about like which way are guys going to go. I mean, I hope that they go the DJ LeMahieu route. I hope there's more guys looking at that and saying, that's a great baseball player. That's what I want to be. But it's a lot more difficult to do that on a consistent basis, where you have to make a lot more contact. You got to be on base more often because you're not getting that big fly ball. Whereas the guys, not to say that hitting a home run is easy, it's not, but their percentages are in your favor because the strikeouts are accepted if you're producing runs with the fly ball. So there's more of a room for error.
You know what I also wonder is if the strategy that a lot of teams are taking, and specifically the Yankees with a big portion of their lineup, launch angle, home runs, walks, and strikeouts, does that translate to winning October baseball?
No.
Well,
some would argue.
I'm
asked like four teams that have won.
No, I know.
A lot of them.
I think you're right there. But it's like, I don't know if we can 100% conclude that, but I'm like, I kind of have that feeling where you need more DJ LeMahieu type players in your lineup to win in October.
And why is that? Because pitching is better. That's why. On a nightly basis, pitching is better.
Yeah.
And you're also starting pitching is better. And then also you're getting the kitchen sink thrown at you with the relievers on a nightly basis as well. So
I think strikeouts are magnified in the postseason in on the pitching side and on the hitting side. Yes, and as our home runs. But I think you're more like once it comes down to the time to face Gerrit Cole in the postseason, or to face whoever, you know, say the Yankees end up having to go up against Shane Bieber, you're more likely to strike out than you are to hit a home run. So I think that's magnified. And if you have contact, guys, things can happen when you put the ball in play. Less things can happen when you don't put the ball in play. Support for Bronx Pinstripes is brought to you by Manscaped. They are the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Scott, both you and I have used Manscaped. The razor, the electric razor, the lotions, the potions, the creams. Oh my, it's a good product.
I don't really like the fact that you talk about us together when we're talking about using these.
We're not together when we use it. Individually together we have
Right, for different reasons though. I've actually, fun fact is, the razor that Manscaped has, this thing is one of the best razors I've ever used. I can tell you this. I've been married for a long time. I don't actually use it the way it's intended. I use this thing on a beard that I have, and it's terrific. It's actually one of the best razors. It works extremely well. But yeah, I get creative with it. And by getting creative with it, I mean I use it like a normal razor.
The electric one.
The electric one. Not the plow.
Yeah,
the plow, I don't.
Yeah, I'm afraid of the plow.
the plow scares me, but it does a phenomenal job from everything I've heard. I've even heard CeCe talk about it. Loves the plow.
Yeah, the plow is. It looks like if you go to like a really legit barbershop, they have plows and they know how to use plows. I don't know how to use plows.
Right. Yeah. No. They're for the skilled, but it is a nice looking razor. It feels great. I can understand how people use it and feel comfortable with it.
So I agree. The electric razor is the best. I've bought many different electric razors over the years because I have a beard and it's just easier to trim it. And they break within like a month of use every single time. I've been using this one. Manscaped sent us product previously. So I've had this thing for over a year. It still works and it charges, which is great. You don't have to refill it with batteries. The charge lasts a while. And if you do want to trim down close to your face, you can get it really close to your face. I have also used it on my nether regions and my face. I know the copy says that's gross, but guess what? I don't care. It's my body.
Yeah, that's gross. The copy is correct. It's gross. The nice thing about this one is the new one that Manscaped has been a friend of the show for a while. So definitely go out there and get this. But this one has an LED light on it. Now, the new razor has an LED,
the new one.
LED light on it. So now you can do this. You can look, you don't have to be ashamed, but you could still do it in the dark if you wanted to.
The Lawnmower 3.0 has
LED light.
Night vision. It has night vision.
It can, wow. Speaking of getting to the nether regions, it can maneuver all angles.
So, and especially, I think it's especially important during quarantine because some people might be afraid to go to a barbershop, or if they need other parts of their body hair removed, they might not want to go out and do this. So they got to do it at home. And that's why Manscaped has you covered. You guys can get 20% off plus free shipping with our code BRONX20 at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. We will thank you because you're going to support Bronx Pinstripes, and we're going to sweeten the pot, aren't we, Scott?
We are. So not only you get 20% off free shipping with the code BRONX20 at manscaped.com, but we're also going to throw in some merch for a couple folks that get this deal. So once you get this deal, take a screenshot of it and send it to us, either email or social media, wherever you feel comfortable. And we're going to put you in the running for two of the brand spanking new NYC snapback hats. These things are, they're not even on the shop yet because we have a new batch of completely custom Bronx Pinstripes NYC hats. They are probably the most premium hat, the most well-fitted hat I've ever had. I'm very proud of these things. So we're going to give away a couple of these as well with everybody who participates. And we just, as another appreciation, we thank you guys for supporting us and also our sponsors, Manscaped. So send a screenshot of that. Send it into Andrew or me or both of us, or email at info@bronxpinstripes.com. And we will put you in the running for giving away two of these snapback hats. And they're pretty sweet. They're pretty sweet.
You're wearing one right now. Every time we put out a video and you're wearing that hat, people say, when are you guys dropping that hat?
Yes, yes. New batch coming in. We sold out of them pretty quickly. New batch coming in with some awesome custom elements on it as well. So I'm really, really excited for this.
You know what else is coming back this fall? Sundays are coming back to the NFL. And with NFL Sunday Ticket.tv, you can stream every live, out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices, plus the Red Zone channel and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. You can never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. I've always wanted to get NFL Sunday Ticket, and I've just never been able to pull the trigger. But I think this is the year I'm going to do it, because what the hell else am I doing?
Well, and also now you can get it. You don't have to have DirecTV anymore. You can get it anywhere you want. You can get it on DirecTV. You can get it on your phone. You can get Red Zone wherever. So use code.
You can have multi-screens going on Sunday afternoon. You can make your own bar at home. You got a laptop. You got a TV. I have two TVs, so there's two games right there, plus my phone, plus my laptop. Leanne's going
to
kill
me. Use promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout to get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE for 15% off your Sunday ticket. Tell your friends, too. 50% off that is a good deal.
Damn good deal. So Aaron Judge did not play on Wednesday night. He came out of the game in the sixth inning on Tuesday, and it raised some eyebrows because Aaron Judge obviously coming out of the game after he hits one of the more impressive home runs he's ever hit to right center field. That thing went like 12 feet total off the ground, a line shot off the Toyota sign in the bullpen. It was sick.
Absolutely smoked that ball.
And then he comes out of the game. It's an 8-3 game when he's pulled, which raises some eyebrows. It's like, it's a big lead, but it's also, it's not, you're not 10 run ruling them. And he just played the top of the inning on defense and then gets pinch hit for. So a lot of gears are turning in my head. I'm like, something doesn't add up here. It's not passing the sniff test. After the game, Aaron Boone says, nope, nothing to see here. Just some precaution because he played the four games on the chop turf. And we just want to get him some extra rest. I pulled him. He's getting his normal treatment. Everyone rested easy at night. I went to bed. I was smiling. I was like, Aaron Judge is going to be in the lineup tomorrow. He's probably going to hit another home run. And then as we woke up, I was like, you know what? I'm not so sure Aaron Judge is going to be in the lineup tonight. And then the lineup came out. Aaron Judge wasn't in the lineup. And it comes out he has lower body tightness. Whatever the hell that means. It's pretty vague. But Aaron Boone, I don't know if you want to call it a lie.
You want to call it a lie.
He was not 100% truthful, and I don't expect him to be 100% transparent. That's not what I'm saying. Transparent and truthful are different. Brian Cashman once said, I talked about this in the Gene Michael history episode. Brian Cashman was quoted. He said, the number one thing I took away from Gene Stick Michael is the power of no comment. If no comment can't get you in trouble, a lie can get you in trouble. So if Aaron Boone was just no comment on Aaron Judge, or more vague that I know what you're going to say, but he didn't need to say he's fine and he's good and everything's normal, because it wasn't everything.
When they're
normal.
Asking specifically about an injury, was there an injury? No, there was not an injury. He's fine. General soreness. That essentially is him giving it.
He didn't say general soreness. He didn't say general soreness.
Whatever. The thing is, there's no injury. There's no injury. That's the question is there an injury? Is he injured? Is he hurt? No, he's not hurt. There's no injury.
At what point is there an injury? If he's not in Friday's lineup, is there an injury?
Doesn't have to be an injury. What his explanation? Look, let me tell you why. They're scared to death of losing him. Scared to death.
Yeah.
Because Stanton is out now an extended period of time, 3 to 4 weeks. Let's all be honest. It's going to be like 8 weeks probably. Maybe he'll come back for the
rest of the season.
Potentially. But they don't want to lose Aaron Judge to something that can be, in their mind, preventable. If you are going to play four games on the turf, which does take a toll differently than grass does. It's the AstroTurf. It's just a different breakdown. Big body dude, lot of weight on there. Gonna be sore on your knees. Gonna feel it in different places. There's an off day behind this as well. Why not take advantage of that? Why not take advantage of that? They want to give him that extra time to do that. I would I be surprised if there were something that became an injury? No, I would not be surprised. I don't want him to tell me that, though. He doesn't need to say that because they don't know that, or they're potentially don't know that. General soreness based on turf, to me, was a fine answer. Fine answer.
Plenty. Well, he gave that answer after he wasn't in the lineup on Wednesday. He didn't give that answer Tuesday after the game.
They have to see how he wakes up. They want to. Boone specifically said is that he saw enough of a different movement before the game on Wednesday in Judge to just give him an off day.
Well, Judge wanted to play on Wednesday, apparently. And the Yankees are being cautious, which we know they always are. So my question is, if you're Aaron Boone after the game, and you know we're probably going to keep him out of the lineup on Wednesday, so I'm going to get caught in this mistruth.
He doesn't, the thing. Like from everything I've read and seen and heard, he made that assessment before the game on Wednesday.
No, I know he did.
So then you're telling him that you want him to look into the future and say that on Tuesday night is what you're
looking for. No, I'm not. No, what I'm asking him to do is he was not truthful on Tuesday night.
He was.
He led people to believe everything was fine, and it clearly was not fine, or else Aaron Judge would have played on Wednesday.
He literally said precautionary turf. He said the exact same reasons. Maybe not as in detail. You want him to say no comment? You know how much people are going to freak out?
He said he took him out of the game.
Hey, why was Aaron Judge taken out because of injury? No comment.
No, you don't literally say no comment. What the no comment quote from Brian Cashman is saying is you be vague. So
what was he doing?
So he was asked, why did Aaron Judge come out of the game in the sixth inning? And what Aaron Boone basically alluded to the fact was that he just played four games over the weekend, and he didn't say he's sore. He just said, I was trying to take advantage of extra rest for him.
Okay.
That's basically what he said.
Okay. That's fine. That to me is a vague answer. Exactly what you're asking for.
So what he was hoping
for... Your expectations are too high for what you're looking for. You need to manage your expectations. Well, this is an expectations problem, not a Boone problem.
I just think it's a problem. It's a trend with the Yankees, and specifically Aaron Boone talking about injuries and not saying the right thing.
There's no right answer. There's no right answer for anybody who wants something. Whatever you want to hear, he's not going to give it to you. Whatever you want to hear.
What he should have said after Tuesday night's game is what he said before Wednesday's game.
What if he didn't know
that? Which is, we took him out because he was a little sore from playing four games on the turf. End of story. And then if he's in the lineup on Wednesday, great. No harm, no foul. If he's not in the lineup on Wednesday, then it's like, well, we know because he was sore last
night. But you don't take a guy out in the seventh inning because he's sore. You take a guy out because you pull a guy or you don't start a guy because he's sore leading up to a game. You don't do that in the seventh inning. You do it as a precaution because, you know, maybe he had some soreness before the game and you're just trying to like give him a little rest. But seventh inning in a game, nobody's being pulled for soreness at that point unless they get physically hit.
That's what I'm saying.
So why do you want him to say that? I think he was literally doing it for precautionary because of the four games in anticipation that maybe he was sore.
whatever. I mean, Aaron Boone's not going to change. The Yankees aren't going to change. Aaron Judge isn't going to change. He's still going to be an injury risk. It's like, I think a bigger problem, people are like, oh, the stupid trop. Like, no, how about Aaron Judge can't play four games, not even four full games, because two of them are seven inning games. So he played like 3.5 games over the weekend on the trop turf and he's sore. Like, that's a bigger issue than anything.
I totally disagree. Literally running on turf is different than running on grass.
Many baseball players play on turf and don't get sore.
They do get sore, but they just play through it. What they're doing here is they're being extra cautious because of the injury history. This is all playing against each other.
Also, isn't the turf at the trop like that rubberized?
Things are different.
Isn't the turf trop like that rubberized stuff? It's not like the cement turf. It's like that rubberized turf.
Oh, yeah. Like, you think that there's not concrete underneath that at the trop, that dump? That place is a hockey arena turned into a SeaWorld, turned into a baseball stadium, turned into a nightclub. I don't know what the hell is underneath there. Is there actual rubber or is it just like trash that they find from somewhere and put in the turf? I don't know what's under there. But that being said, even if it's rubber, it's different. It's a different feel.
Yeah, it's a different feel. And Aaron Judge is the most important player on the Yankees. He's the best player on the Yankees. And it's concerning yet again that he can't stay on the field.
If it were up to him, he would have played.
Well, it's not up
right
to him.
So therefore, it's not his fault that he was being honest and said his knees were. You want him to say, no, I feel great. No soreness. Zero soreness. Would you rather him say that?
I'm not blaming Aaron Judge for saying that he's sore. Like, if you're sore, you have to tell the trainers that you're sore.
So you're blaming him.
When did he tell the trainers that he's sore?
You're blaming him for for his body feeling a little different than it normally does after playing in grass. I don't understand how you can
have never played when you have never played a season in Major League Baseball without getting injured. Yeah, I'm blaming him. Sorry.
All right. Well, I mean, I just think that's unrealistic. I think your expectations are out of line.
My expectations are out of line that Aaron Judge can't play in a 60-game season.
The team held him back because they're scared to death.
What's the difference? He's not on the field. What does it matter if he says I can play or not? He's not on the field. That's the end result.
But you said it's his fault. Why is it his fault when he wants to play?
No, it's his fault for that. You have to look at the player and say that guy is an injury risk. Aaron Judge is an injury risk.
He's in good shape. I don't think it's like the conditioning.
We've seen guys in good shape get hurt and guys not in good shape not get hurt.
My point is, like, what do you want him to do? If he's in good shape, preparing the way he's supposed to, he's a 6'8 giant.
Honestly, he can't do anything.
He's got to go play on the trop turf. And then whatever happens.
There's nothing he can do, which kind of sucks because it is completely out of his and out of the Yankees' control. It's just something that is a reality that Aaron Judge, among many other players on this roster, are injury risks.
Okay.
Yet another reason why a long-term contract for Aaron Judge might not be in the cards.
Okay. That's fair. Looking at that and then determining what someone is worth based on how they can stay on the field is absolutely fair. I don't think Boone was lying, though. I'm glad he told us what he did. I think it was as much of the truth as we could have found.
He's extremely frustrating when it comes to injuries.
If he's not in the lineup on Friday against the Red Sox, now we got problems.
Well, there's a chance he's not going to be because Aaron Boone said, I hope so, but Friday is a long way off. Why even say that?
That's the vague answer you're looking for, isn't it? Isn't that the vague answer you're looking for?
That's a douchey answer.
I mean, I don't know how else. Like, yes, we're planning on him being...
We will evaluate on Friday. End of story.
Oh, I would say I hope you're evaluating on Thursday too. Would you take a Thursday off?
Whatever.
What, are you guys not working on Thursday?
So because Aaron Judge was not in the lineup, we had Clint Frazier make his first start of the season in right field. Didn't make any gaffes in right field, which is good news. He looked awesome at the plate. Three missiles off of his bat. He's talking about how he feels the best of his career. He's never been better. This is his chance. It's the unfortunate reality of the position he's in. But in order for him to stick on this roster as basically the last guy on the roster, he needs to mash the ball for the next 10 to 14 days before potentially Giancarlo Stanton comes back.
Would you say that there's a direct competition right now, potentially, with him and Talkman? As far as the way that the... Well, hold on. I'm not just in this season, but Yankees longer term. Brett Gardner's probably not going to be on this team next year. Do you agree with that? Mm-mm. So who's going to be the starting left fielder?
I think that,
because I think that job Mike is up. Talkman, I think that job is up for grabs right now.
I think it is also up for grabs, but we've talked about this. Mike Talkman is the ideal fourth outfielder. Right. So in a way, it's Clint Frazier's starting left field job to lose. He has a higher ceiling than Talkman, but he doesn't have his floor is much lower than Talkman. You know what you're getting with Talkman. Really positive defense, can play all three outfield positions, can come off the bench and have a good at-bat.
Or even run.
Like he does all the things well. He just might not have the ceiling that Clint Frazier has because he doesn't have the talent, frankly, that Clint Frazier has. So Clint Frazier might be like the starting left fielder. And that might be his job to lose. But I don't necessarily think that it's in a competition with Mike Talkman. I think it's in a competition with himself.
That's fair. I think he's got to show defensively that he can play the position or play the outfield in a competent way. You know, I think that's a huge hurdle for him to overcome because I don't think the Yankees doubt the bat. I don't think the Yankees doubt the bat.
He did show that he can play the outfield competently in the minors last year, even though he didn't show it in the majors. Like he showed it in the minors.
Okay. So show me that you're not a 4A defensive player then. That's what he needs to almost prove.
But he didn't make his defensive mistakes were like a high schooler can make.
I think a lot of them were mental. Honestly, I think a lot of them were mental.
I know.
And he was just in a weird place last year. And I feel like the mature Clint Frazier, if that's what he is now, if he has taken that next step as far as, you know, just being a more mature baseball player and professional, I think that's going to help him immensely in the outfield because I think he's got the physical talent to do it. Just the ability to block things out, stay focused in the moment, and play the position that you're currently in, and not letting anything else outside affect you. Because I think that does affect him, or it did at that point.
So that's more long term, but for 2020, don't you agree? Like he's in a position where he has got to just hit the ball.
He's got to mash
over the next 2 weeks.
And not show like he's a liability in the field.
Yes,
because there's another guy who can hit as well in Miguel Andujar that could essentially be that similar role.
Yeah, but so Andujar got his sporadic playing time and didn't hit. Frazier, especially if Judge is out for any extended period of time, we'll get at least regular at bats. But assuming Judge is back in the lineup over the weekend, Frazier's going to get like 3 games a week max. So he's got to hit in those 3 games a week or else he's just going back to alternate site.
Yeah, he's got to hit. He came out of the gate hot, man. The first swing, first at bat shot. I mean, that I know we always talk about the first thing anybody talks about is this bat speed, but my God, that bat speed is beautiful to watch.
Yeah, and actually him and Andujar are in a lot of ways similar players because neither of them walk at the plate. Neither of them really take pitches. They're just there to hit the ball and hit the ball hard.
See ball, hit ball.
So, yeah.
And neither of them can play defense very well.
Clint Frazier strikes out more than Andujar, but otherwise they're very similar players at the plate. I do think that long term, or even in the short term, Frazier's a better outfielder than Andujar.
Sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, I guess so. Maybe.
What do you think is an ideal scenario for the Yankees? If you think Brian Cashman could draw up the scenario, do you think it's that Clint Frazier hits and then they trade him for something this offseason, or that he hits and then he turns into the starting left fielder?
I think honestly, like, you're not going to get the value of Clint Frazier, even if he hits right now, because he's shown the other side of it, I feel like that's already diminished the peak value of him. So I don't even think you're getting peak. Even if he rakes for like a
what if he?
I don't think you're still going to get the. I don't think you're going to get the max out of him. I don't, and especially in a weird year like this, I don't think it's a. I think the value for Clint Frazier would be the starting left field job. I think because next year, all signs are pointing to that it's going to be open. That him being a fixture in the lineup with a dynamic bat and assuming that he can play a league average defense, that's where the value is. Because I don't think you're going to get anything in return that's going to be significantly more than that, than an everyday position player.
Who is more likely to be on the team next year? Clint Frazier or Miguel Andujar?
Frazier. there's an open spot.
I agree.
Miguel Andujar has no spot.
Yeah, there's Gio no spot.
Gio is the third baseman. There's just no doubt about that anymore.
And Stanton is the DH.
Maybe. But if Stanton's not the DH, I don't think they fill a spot with the DH either.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like Stanton's the DH, or if he's hurt, it's a rotating spot. Yeah. It's not just, and you don't keep a guy because, oh, we're keeping Andujar because he's the backup DH. You don't do that.
No.
Yeah. I got some good eye test versus nerd test. We're gonna start up that segment. But first I want to just briefly talk about Jordan Montgomery, who had a bounce back start after his last outing in Philly. And I was really impressed with the pitch mix. He utilized all of his pitches, and I have some numbers here. So the percent usages, I noticed something different in his start against Atlanta. Look at the fastball percentage. He used his four-seam fastball 38% of the time against Atlanta. In his previous two starts, 11.5% against the Phillies and then 9% against Boston. So he went away from his sinker and into his four-seam fastball in his most recent start. That might just be matchups, or it might be just a feel thing, but when he's got that good four-seam fastball and changeup working, that is a really good combination.
He definitely went a lot more off speed in this, because if you look at the percentages, the curve is at practically 25%, change is 25%, and then the four-seam is at 40%. So
yeah,
you're looking at working off the fastball, establishing the strike zone, dropping some dimes, and occasionally showing that sinker that looks like the four-seamer.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think maybe he's still trying to figure it out, right? I think he's still trying to, he's still trying to evolve, and he's still trying to figure out what works for him. Like, I don't know. He's got five pitches. Like, that's the weird thing, is that a lot of times you see starters, it's like, okay, he's got three pitches, and it's just a matter of which one feels great that day. Like Tanaka, right? Tanaka basically has abandoned his four-seam fastball. He throws sinkers, splitters, and sliders. That's what Tanaka throws. And it's just a matter of which one is working that day, is which one he's going to throw the most. With Montgomery, he has four legitimate, maybe even five legitimate pitches.
I mean, that's why I'm so high on him, because he does have command over these pitches. And I love the fact that he's, you know, working off of the fastball. And like you said, it could have been matchup related as well. And if that's the case, then he's got the ability to, on a given day, live on a sinker, live on a four seamer, you know, throw the change. The changeup looks pretty consistent over the three starts. I mean, he was using that a quarter of a time. But that changeup to me is more effective when you're throwing the fastball for strikes as well. The sinker is more effective in spots when you are throwing the fastball over the plate and you're controlling that fastball. That sinker becomes a strikeout pitch. Cutter becomes a strikeout pitch. So there's the fact that he's got these pitches and can use them on different days is huge. I think you're going to see this Jordan Montgomery, because that fastball now does have a little bit more life on it. I think we are going to see him using it more and starting with the fastball and really working off of the fastball. Because now, if as a batter, if you have to respect that and at all times and look for a 95, 96 mile an hour fastball, then you're in trouble when he's popping something else, you know? And he's got a couple of pitches that look like the fastball coming out of the hand. He's going to be very, very difficult to pick up.
Yeah, and he's got most of his swings and misses on the changeup this year. So that pitch, I mean, I guess maybe I just forgot, because the last time we saw him pitch was way back in 2017. Like, it was so long ago that he was a full-time starter for them.
When I see the first two starts looking at, and just like eye test as well, you know, watching him pitch, the control is, if he's got the control, if he's got the feel of that fastball on a given day, like, we're going to be getting good Jordan Montgomery. It seems like on the first two starts against Boston and Philly, you know, didn't have the control early, and then abandon the fastball a little bit. And maybe that's more on game plan. Maybe that's also on, you know, whoever Higgy was catching the last time for him as well, right? So against Philly. So maybe there was a game plan thing that was abandoned too early, and that could be on both of them as well. You know, sticking with it, I think, is something that he should be doing, because that fastball sets everything else up.
He had really quick innings in the middle innings against Atlanta, and he got into trouble. And who was it that hit the three-run shot? Was it Ozuna hit the three-run bomb off of him? But through five innings, he was untouchable.
Yeah, and theoretically, when you see a guy like Jordan Montgomery really coming to form the way that he can, he's definitely a guy that you can see go through a lineup three times because of the five pitches.
If you have four or five pitches, you can do that because you cannot show – maybe you can go through the lineup the first time and not show your changeup or not show your cutter. Or they Brooks Baseball calls it a cutter. I think it's probably more of a slider, but whatever it is, it moves sideways.
Yeah, it's not as fast as a fastball, and it moves away or into a batter.
Doesn't move as down as this curveball.
Right. No, I mean, and to me, when you're showing something that looks like a fastball, and then it's either a sinker, a cutter, or a changeup, based to what the batter sees, because it's similar arm slot. I mean, his arm slots is very similar in all of them, but you can see the curve a little differently out of the hand. Those three pitches to me are actually very similar out of the hand. So if he can, you know, really get that deception, then he's got some really high upside. Again, he reminds me of a left-handed Mike Mussina in the way that he throws because he's so over the top as well. But he does hide the ball a little bit.
How do you not go with Andy?
Because everybody goes Andy Pettit. He does because he's not as Andy Pettit wasn't as over the top as Jordan Montgomery is.
I think he was.
To me, it looks like a mirror of Mussina.
Just flipped.
A mirror. Yeah, that's what a mirror does.
Not it does. Yeah, yeah.
You know, mirrors. Yeah. Mirrors.
What did you think of Tanaka's start? Because he, after the game, said he was not good. He got pulled after four innings. And frankly, he was lucky that Hicks robbed a home run or else it would have been a much worse start.
Yeah, I don't think it was a great start by any means. You know, again, only getting through four innings is not what you want.
His pitch count has gone, I wrote it down. His pitch count has gone up every game. So maybe they're just slowly working him up.
66.
Where did I put the pitch count?
66 pitches.
Yeah, so what was it by game though? Where did I put that? Okay, so he went 51 pitches in the first game against Boston. And then at Tampa, he pitched 59. And then he's up to 66 pitches against Atlanta.
Okay, so not getting the duration as far as into the game, but I think he's a work in progress, man. I think that he's not happy with himself. That's fine. But this is kind of what we expected, isn't it? I feel like are we expecting him to get seven innings at this point? Even six innings? Like,
no.
I'm really not. I don't know. He's going to be an interesting guy when it comes to the end of the year. Talk about competition. Like, that's James Paxton, Masahiro Tanaka right now are you know, lining themselves up for, you know, who the Yankees are going to sign, because it's not going to be both of them. It's going to be one of them. And I think that Tanaka is trending probably not in the direction of them re-signing him. Probably going to be Paxton, in my opinion. But
I mean, Paxton hasn't been good either. And if his velocity hasn't returned this year, that's a big
one. If the velocity does not, yeah, the injuries will prevent all of that and totally change the narrative. But there's more upside there.
There's definitely more upside. But what if Paxton, because he's a Boris guy, demands like a massive contract and Tanaka would come back at more of a hometown deal?
Then that changes things too. Tanaka's got to be able to get through these regular season starts and show that he can be at the end. This season's not – it's actually a really good season for him. As far as being a short season to go into a free agent year.
Are you talking about Tanaka?
Yeah, for Tanaka. Because he doesn't have the full season of mediocre starts.
Well, that's the thing. If he can just work his way... Ideal season for Tanaka getting another contract is he works his way through the season, progressing, building up to the playoffs, has three really good playoff starts, and then cashes in. So eye test versus nerd test. This kind of was born last week or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was. The way I envision this is I present a nerd stat to you, and then you tell me if that matches your eye test. Is that how you envision this?
Sure. Let's try it. Let's see what happens. I'll let you know afterwards with my eye test.
The first nerd test is on Michael King. Of course it's on Michael King. I had to pick a Michael King one. His sinker has been filthy this year. He's thrown it 56.9% of the time, and he's allowing an .063 batting average, a .132 expected batting average, a .125 slugging, a 177 expected slugging, and 85 mile an hour exit velocity. I think a sinker baller like him really can play in the game today with the way hitters approach at the plate.
It can. So, okay, this does not surprise me. The numbers like skewing as low as they are, as positive they are for King, you know, or maybe are a little surprising, but you can tell that it's a good pitch. Here's the thing with him. Is he needs the compliment. He needs the to me, a sinker baller that is extremely effective, he's able to show something that looks very similar to the sinker ball, but does something differently, right? So that the sinker...
I think usually they have slider changeup. Sinker ballers have slider changeup.
Even you can show a fastball. You can still show a fastball too. It doesn't even have to be a high velocity fastball, but if you can show it and it's not moving, but still looks the same out of the hand, you're going to fool a ton of people on that sinker. So he's got to be consistent with his second and third pitches, more consistent for me, for that to be a long, for that sinker to be more effective in all of his starts on a higher percentage basis. Does that make sense? So like then he can throw it more if it's complemented better.
Yeah. And I guess the tough thing though, with his pitch arsenal is, what does he project as? Does he project as a back of the rotation guy? Does he project as a middle reliever? Like what?
I think that he projects as like an opener, a five starter. Honestly, he's the guy that could, you know, I don't know in today's baseball, but he could theoretically, if you're stretching him out, go out there every fifth day and limit damage, you know,
over
five or six innings because of his repertoire.
And if he can do that on the Yankees, that's a very valuable.
I agree.
So, okay. So that matches. Right?
He is essentially what J-Hap should be. Well, what could be?
I mean, the next one's on J-Hap, and J-Hap doesn't have a sinker. If J-Hap had a sinker, maybe he'd be doing a little bit better. J-Hap, so he's been skipped in the rotation. He's going to have to start next week because they don't have an off day, but they're TBD what the plan is for him. Since the start of 2019, J-Hap has allowed the most home runs per nine innings pitched among all starters in baseball, minimum 150 innings pitched, 2.04 home runs per nine. The juice ball has turned him into an ineffective guy that you cannot even put on the mound.
So you're looking for you think that's a nerd? That's an eye test thing. I mean, that's clear, isn't it?
No, but so the eye test says he can't pitch anymore. The nerd test says he can't pitch anymore.
Right. So the nerd test is just.
So was that not a good nerd test?
That was not a good nerd test. That's just like the nerd test. Like you're just getting a very easy positive there.
So he has allowed 2.04 home runs per nine. No one else in baseball has allowed more over two home runs per nine. Everyone else is under two.
Minimum 150 pitches.
150 innings pitched.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to know the best in the league?
Who's number two and three on that list? Is Verlander on that list?
No. Caleb Smith, Matthew Boyd, who we talked about a bunch last year, Mike Leake.
Mike Leake makes a lot of sense.
You see Kikuchi, Steven Matz, Ronaldo Lopez, Robbie Ray, your boy, Trevor Williams, Jacob Junis. Those guys are all giving up the most home runs per nine innings. I don't know where Justin Verlander ranked.
Are you talking about 2020 or 2019? You're looking up.
Since the start of 2019. Cole ranked 44th in baseball. Do you know who ranks seventh in baseball as the least amount of home runs given up per nine innings?
Seventh in baseball, the least amount of home runs given up is going to be.
You have a relationship history with this guy.
Sonny Gray.
Ding, ding, ding. Do you know who's number 11? He used to be a Yankee and he smells like hot dogs.
Yep. and he plays for the Texas Rangers.
Lance Lynn. So, home runs per nine are not like an end all be all stat. You cannot give up a lot of home runs and you can still allow runs, but it just shows like those guys are keeping the ball in the ballpark. And maybe that's Cincinnati for Sonny Gray and Texas for Lance Lynn. Those are hitters ballparks. So you can't say it was a Yankee Stadium
thing. Lance Lynn was just like, I think if he had stayed with the Yankees, he'd be this too. He's just a hoss and, good for him. Sonny Gray is just a mental midget, so that's why he's fine in Cincinnati where nobody cares.
So, but J-Hap has been skipped in the rotation this week because of the off days. I think he'll pitch next week, but I think that's what he's going to be the rest of the year. If you can skip him, you skip him.
Unless he can show that he's second half 2019 J-Hap and he's your second best pitcher on the team. Yeah.
All right. So, most productive hitters on the Yankees so far this season ranked by OPS Plus with a minimum of 30 plate appearances. You familiar with OPS Plus or would you like me to explain it?
For the people, you should explain it.
So OPS Plus is a metric that basically normalizes ballparks and ranks you amongst the league, with 100 being league average. The higher the number, the better. The lower the number, the worse. So if you are a 200 OPS player, you are two times the offensive player as league average. And if you are zero, then you are 100% below. You are half the player of the normal player baseball. Actually, Brian Kenny said this is his favorite stat on Baseball Reference, because you can compare era to era because it normalizes for your era. So Babe Ruth had a 200 OPS plus. He was twice the player of his era.
It's based on the competition.
Yes. So I do really like OPS plus. A lot of people prefer WRC plus on Fangraphs. I'm not going to say that OPS plus is better, but what I'm going to say is Baseball Reference website loads faster on my computer, so I usually go there.
That's because it's an Excel spreadsheet. Here's the thing, the where it doesn't translate though into eras. Like, I understand relatively it changes into eras. You see what a player was in their given era compared to everybody else in that era. Doesn't compare what a player would be in a different era though. Because yes, we're saying Babe Ruth was two times the player in that era. Okay, so what if Mike Tauchman's playing in that era with his current stats?
That's almost impossible. Right, that's a rabbit hole you'll never get out of.
That's why there should be no, that conversation should just be done. Like, there's no stat that's going to tell you what you want to know based on era to era. You just have to look at them in a vacuum and then.
No, what he meant is, it's like if you look back to the 1920s and you just see Babe Ruth hitting 330 with 58 to 60 home runs, obviously that looks good. But what if everyone was hitting 58 home runs? Then it wouldn't be as impressive.
I guess, but when you see OPS plus, you know that. That's like, you clearly know that that was not the case.
But eye test, you weren't around in 1927.
I don't have to be around. You see the way that literally the man was wearing fur coats and crowns off the field, that it was kind of a big deal of him.
Eye test your eyes. Who has been the most productive offensive player on the Yankees this year?
It's Aaron Judge, 1,000%.
And he has a 201 OPS plus. He leads the team second.
So he is Babe Ruth in 2020.
Of this year, yeah. Second, well, Babe Ruth had a 200 career OPS. Second is Giancarlo Stanton, 191. And until Judge hit the home run Tuesday night, Stanton was number one on the team. And I don't think the eye test would have said that.
No, because he did have a 2-for-18 mixed into the, I think his last home run and then the torrid start. So I would not have put him again. My eye test would not have put him ahead of Judge ever. For sure, but he would have been up there because.
Do you know what's different about Judge this year? Is his walk rate is surprisingly low relative to his career. He's got a 4.4% walk rate versus 12.7% his career, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's an approach at the plate. He has been more aggressive.
Yeah.
He's pulling the ball. He sees a pitch he likes, and instead of taking it, he's attacking
it. Which we want. 400 feet.
Which, yes, I think he's. 4% for him is a low walk rate, and I think that that will go up as pitchers start to realize, okay, I can't throw a strike to him on the first pitch because he's going to hit it back at my forehead.
You can't throw a strike to him, period.
Right. So I think as the season progresses, assuming he's on the field, knock on wood, that walk rate will start to go up.
Yeah, it's very low.
And right, I think he's more of a double-digit walk rate guy, but if he's also pulling the ball and being aggressive, he's a complete offensive player, definitely most productive on the field. That lines up with the eye test. LeMahieu is third on the team, 176. I think you would say that lines up. Who has been the worst? I mean, this is easy.
Yeah. It's between two guys, but it's really one. It's Gary Sanchez. Gleyber, you could put down there. I wouldn't have expected him to be as low as Gary, but just because he's struggling, he's had some more peaks than Gary has had. But, you know, does this include Gary's home run last night too?
Yes, and he was actually negative OPS plus until that home run.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, he's been terrible. His at-bats recently have been better.
I thought that. So that home run last night looked like a Gary Sanchez swing. He was aggressive. He pulled it. He was balanced. It was a missile. And I thought, even though he went 0-for-4 on Tuesday night, he had long at-bats. And I was like, you know what? My eye test says Gary Sanchez is starting to figure it out. He's not going down on three pitches, so that's a plus.
Body language says a lot about him, too, because he shows it. You know, he shows the subtle body language when he's very frustrated. And then when he's in a groove, like, it doesn't seem like anything bothers him. He just doesn't give a you know, and he's just waiting for his pitch. And the balance, like, that's such a big, when you see a balanced swing from Gary Sanchez, you know he's feeling confident. It's when he starts, you know, leaking out on that front foot and flailing, then he's just in a really bad spot. If he's staying back and identifying the pitches and just, you know, being able to barrel up strikes, that's where he does damage. He needs to lay off those other things, but confidence will do that to you. I'm glad we're getting better at bats.
So the last nerd stat test was tweeted out by Mike Petriello, and this one makes me so angry. Percentage of batters faced by starting pitchers is at an all-time low, and it's so much lower than last year, it's not even funny. So this year it's at like 55% of batters faced in games are by starting pitchers, which means
that's bullpens that's are gross numbers of batters that happen in a game, right? All at bats, yep, in a 9-inning game or what, a conclusion of, yep, a game. Okay.
Yep. So essentially the game is now half starting pitchers, half bullpen. And it is the lowest in baseball history. Last year it was, I don't have the exact number. It's kind of a chart that's like, you know, goes by 10 percentage points, but it's close to the 60% mark. So over the last, let's call it decade, it's gone from close to 68% now down to 55 or lower percent. I mean, you go back 100 years, it was almost 100%, but I'm not expecting that. 70% seems right to me, though, doesn't it? And like, doesn't 70%, 65, 70% seem like, okay, you got these bullpens and they're good, and a lot of guys can throw really hard, but a starter should still be going 65% of the game. That seems right to me. But 55%, approaching 50%, that's not good.
This looks like we had a little bit of a leveling out around 70% from 1960 or even from 1950 something through the 90s. We hovered around 70%, and then once the 90s happened, the steroid era happened, you start seeing now the trend going down, which leads me to believe is that these home runs were happening, steroids were happening, guys were figuring out starting pitchers a lot more often because of that, and now owners and general managers are trying to get these guys out in all ways possible, so they're specializing. And it seems like if you look at the numbers and the trends, it does kind of line up with the way that baseball trended as well.
But look at like 2010. It kind of had a resurgence. Starters had a resurgence. And then since like 2010, it's just plummets.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been a shift. And I think a lot of it is because everything is specialized now. There's a specialization, you know, in baseball, everybody, whether it's you playing defense, you know, shifting based on a guy, the way that he hits, you know, pitchers not throwing as much, the contracts play into this. Honestly, if we see the DH go into the National League full time as well, it's going to continue to trend in this direction. We're going to see a capitulation on this particular chart, because now you're going to get the National League doing exactly what the American League is doing, and we're going to see a ton more specialized bullpen arms, I think, because there's a DH. You got to face one more guy who's a lethal bat.
So that was eye test versus nerd test. I don't know if we're going to do four or five stats every time. Maybe we'll just do one. But I kind of enjoyed that segment. And if you guys out there have an eye test or a nerd test that you want us to verify, tweet at us. And we'll give you a shout out on next episode in eye test versus nerd test. How do you feel about a neutral site playoff bubble?
Fine.
Because there was an article on The Athletic about it. And it seems like a lot of front offices and general managers and stuff are talking about this around the league as a possibility. Is it would be for the wild card round, like three different sites, and then for the rest of the playoffs, maybe even down to one site.
Yeah, totally good with it. It's all good. It's obviously proving.
You think it limits
every other sport?
Yeah,
the logistic concerns were the biggest problem, I think, for baseball, because now you're only getting half the league for a short amount of time, but you're getting a lot fewer people that are going to be at a field. I think it becomes more of a realistic scenario, and it's a shorter amount of time as well. So yeah,
it's a month.
Here's my problem with that. Only problem is that to get into it, do they have to have a certain amount of time off for them to get into the bubble, which means that everybody's going to have an extended period of time from regular season to postseason because of that. And I don't like that.
That's a good point. And it would almost be a detriment, because if you'd have to do 2 weeks. And if you put teams on pause for 2 weeks, that completely changes things.
So it depends on how they get into this.
I would think, though, for the first wild card round, because the top teams are going to be playing 3 home games against the bottom teams, I think you should keep those in home ballparks. Give, say, the Yankees or the Twins or the Dodgers, when they win their divisions, give them a little bit of an advantage in that wild card round for this expanded playoffs. And then once you get past that wild card round, go to one bubble site, do it in Miami in the dome, or do it in Southern California where you have 2 stadiums. Go to Florida. Well, that was one of the locations.
Yeah.
Wouldn't LA make sense?
I don't want there to be an extended period of time from you know, if they're going from wild card game into a bubble. If that's part of the deal, if they have to mandate, because if you're doing a bubble, you got to make sure that the bubble is clean, right? Theoretically. So yeah, that would probably have to happen. And if that's the case, then I'm not a fan, because now you're changing things.
So Joe Maddon was quoted in the article talking about a neutral site World Series possibly being something baseball could do forever. So like the Super Bowl, once you get to the World Series, it's always played in warm weather or a dome. His quote was, "I've been involved in some really hellacious World Series weather, the worst being in Philadelphia in 2008. Football shouldn't have been played on that day. So you get to the most important part of the year, and then you ask the players to play under circumstances that really do not contribute to the best baseball." I don't think the solution to that is a neutral site World Series. I think the solution to that is, don't play the World Series at the very end of October and you won't have hellacious weather. Maybe play it mid-October when the weather is going to be a little bit better, which means shorten the season.
I mean, yeah. I don't really like the neutral site.
No, I would hate that. I would hate
you
that.
Really,
football, I understand.
You're crushing the fans, man.
Crushing the fans. You're crushing advantages. You play to have World Series Game 7 at home. That's what you play for.
The fans. It's all about the fans.
I mean, baseball. I mean, teams, too.
I know, but it's more about the fans.
Okay. Well,
I just don't want... If the Yankees are in Game 7 of the World Series, and it's a home game, if that game is not at Yankee Stadium, I got big problems with that.
I mean, it's gonna feel like neutered. It's not gonna feel right. It's gonna feel like wrong. It's gonna feel
wrong.
Just no, but it's gonna feel like I'm drawing a blank on the word. It's gonna feel like an all-star
game. It's also different. You can't. The Super Bowl is one game. It's one game.
Exactly.
Game season. Whereas the baseball season is long as all hell. It's a series. It's not the same thing. Like, you can't have the same people hanging out for a 7-game series in a town that they don't live in.
But I do agree, baseball should not be played in 41-degree weather. Like, it shouldn't. You don't get the best product.
It's just part of it. They're both playing on the same day with the same amount of talent under the same circumstances. As long as there's not a swarm of midges coming at you, then all things are equal.
Last thing I want to mention is
I feel bad for Jabba. People were making that as a joke. Like that. Now look at the person. Dude went bankrupt. Bar went down.
Yeah, I was gonna say
it's a sad story.
It's directly COVID related, right? Like, his bar went under. It's got to be COVID.
I don't know. I assume that there's nobody going to bars down there. Probably it didn't help matters. But yeah, it's just a sad story, honestly. And he just left everything there. Like, that's depressing as all hell. Something's not right there. I hope Jabba's doing okay. I love Jabba, and his time with the Yankees. And
he
did get screwed.
Do you realize the trade deadline is less than 3 weeks
That's
away?
That's crazy. So we're talking about, like, if the Yankees were to trade Andujar or Frazier at this point, like,
I would think that would happen in the offseason.
I'm just saying, if they were, now your sample size is so small.
I don't expect any movement to happen at the trade deadline. I expect it to be crickets, except for, like, you know, oh, this guy cleared waivers and he's going to, you know, Brian Cashman's acquired some no-name off the 40-man roster or something. Because when you look at the playoff picture, who can you rule out in the American League? Like, who are completely out of the playoffs? Like, 2 teams, Royals Mariners.
Yeah.
That's it. I know the Red Sox are in last place and they're garbage, and I don't think they're going to make the playoffs, but can you really rule them out? They're like 6 games out. And they're like three games out of a playoff spot. You can't rule that out.
You can't rule that out, but you can also look at what's going to, like, I can rule out the Orioles.
But what I'm saying is you essentially have 80.
You got to play the Yankees how many more times?
You have like 80% of the league in it, quote unquote.
You're going to get the guys that are going to go are the ones that have expiring contracts, the ones that they're
only on bad teams, though. Only on teams completely out of it.
Yeah, I guess. But I don't think that ownership or general, I don't think ownership on any of these teams is actually weighing a championship this year as highly as they normally would. So I don't think actually that's going to be the case. I think that the teams will be a lot easier, even if they're in the middle of something or close to it on expanded playoffs, that they're going to be like, well, we really don't have a chance, which also just proves why the expanded playoffs is stupid. Because they know they don't have a chance.
Yeah. 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 I just thought, I was like, August 31st trade deadline. Holy shit. That's like,
that's coming up fast, man.
Less than 2.5 weeks away. It just normally in a normal season, 2 weeks before the trade deadline, there'd be like so many rumors. What does this team need? It's just, it's going to be crickets.
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if there were just, you know, the expiring contracts, those not expiring contracts, but you know what I mean? Ones that are going to run up, guys that are going to hit free agency, rentals, bunch of rentals shipped around.
Anyway, thank you to our sponsors for this episode, Sunday Ticket, Manscaped, and Bet Online. Again, guys, support those companies and you're essentially supporting this podcast. Also support family business, Richard Allen Coffees. I haven't talked about that in a while. We got a new flavor. You a pistachio fan?
I am a pistachio fan. Pistachio ice cream, love it. One of my favorites.
Yeah, that's great. Pistachio cake, pistachio muffins are great. We got pistachio coffee up in the store.
Is pistachio a tree nut?
I don't know, Scott.
Well, almonds are a tree nut. And my brother ruined my wedding because I couldn't get the almond cake that I wanted because he's allergic to tree nuts after he turned like 30 years old.
So there's tree nuts and like ground nuts?
Sure. Yeah. Peanuts don't grow on a tree.
This is a lot of nut talk with Manscaped and now.
And speaking now of nuts, go to manscaped.com and use Bronx20 to get 20% off.
And if you want to order that pistachio coffee, you can go to richardallencoffee.com and use code Bronx for 25% off. Again, guys, appreciate all the support. Scott, anything else that you want to say?
I'm good, man. Let's have another week. I just need to see Aaron Judge on the field so that I can just talk about your expectations being out of line again.
So we can all rest easy at night. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
Sports are back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is back in action, and there's no better place to start wagering than with our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and prop bets you can bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and 7-time NBA champ Robert Horry. See what they had to say on what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. It's actually very, very interesting because all of these sports obviously are playing without fans. You might not think it's a huge adjustment for some players, but it really is. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember, use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.